So welcome everybody to our office hours call for the month of February 2021. So these are the calls where everybody that's whatever program you're in, some of you are in like CMDS or IRSBT, most of you actually are in NEPT who are on this call, and you get to ask questions, right? You get to ask me whatever you need to ask me about clients, about the family member you're working with, about your own health, if it's something that is going to be helpful for other practitioners, because we have other calls that you guys can come to for that. Whether it's something about your business, something about a new client, something about a lab test, something about content, whatever it is you want to ask me, I'm here for you. So that's why we call it office hours. I'm open office hours, whatever you want to ask. The way that you do this, you put up your hand. You can go over to where it says participants and you can put that in there. And one of the things I am going to do, because I think we have, it's usually linked to my calendar where, RSVP. I can see who RSVP. Sometimes people can't make it. And if you can't make it, you're welcome to post a question. So you just have to click when you get the reminder email, it says respond. The way that we answer questions, you put your hand up, you can go to there, you put your hand up that way, or you can put your hand up. I see Shelly has her hand up. You can wave at me, but if I'm in the middle of talking to one person, I can't remember the order that you guys did it. So you go to where it says participants, and at the bottom, it should say raise hand. And there's other things you can do. So I see Shelly, and then I see Judy. Okay. So Shelly, unmute.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is afternoon for you. You have to remember I'm in California.
Is it afternoon? Yeah, it's afternoon. I don't know. It just the whole day just blends together for me.
After hearing your story, the little bit that I heard, I was like, oh my gosh, poor thing. Yes. I saw your ice pictures. Anyhow. I'm glad you look nice and cozy warm anyway.
Mm-hmm. I don't wear this very often, but.
Here's my thing. I do have some questions I could ask about my own health because it's been rather a ruckusy ride lately, but I'm trying to maintain and stay, on my path with school too, barely, but mostly I'm doing it because I had a previous practice client. Well, she's actually paying/practice, but she is stage 4 kidney. And I'm just trying to approach her as if, there's a lot of foundational things I can teach her, basically, even though I'm not an advanced practitioner that specializes in renal dialysis or anything.
No, but that's the thing there, so much of this goes down to the basics, right? Yep. People are put on dialysis and they're, eating Cheetos.
Exactly. And she is. So she's really something else. So very sweet woman, 45 years old. She has a hereditary, very thin basement membrane disorder for her nephrons. And so she has basically approached it that she doesn't want to do anything about it. And now that the doctor has said, well, you're now at stage 4. I know it was 10 years ago that we did your biopsy and we didn't really know what was causing your health problem, but now you should get on the transplant list. And not only that, but if in the meantime, because there's 80,000 people on that transplant list, we're probably going to have to, soon, not now, because you're still out of the woods, ha ha ha. Stage 4 is not out of the woods in my book, no. But you need to consider dialysis in the interim. So she's coming to me through a friend, another nurse that says, can you help her? Is there anything we can do? So anyway, so I'm of course referring back to her doctors and all the reports. I've gone through all of her labs. She looks like she's actually doing pretty well, except for being stage 4 and that her, her glomerular filtration rate is dropping down.
How low is it?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I forget the exact number because
I have under 50.
It's like, I want to say like 20.
Okay.
Or like 27. And if she gets below, she's pretty close to the point where she'll be stage 5 if she keeps going.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to approach it that, yes, I know she just had an appointment 3 weeks ago, but she needs to schedule an appointment with me and her doctor and a renal dialysis, a renal specialist nutritionist, so we can all get together. Meanwhile, I'm doing some research on, what the original biopsy showed that they could not confirm. because in 10 years, there's more research. Like, for example, thin right. basement membrane disease is supposed to only happen in men. Well, recently, there's a journal article I found that it is in women. So hello, you know, which is your story, the one from more recent, or are you guys all going by the one from 10 years ago? And they haven't updated her diagnosis. This is through Kaiser. Okay. So that says a lot.
Yeah, and right you know, there. The interesting thing is, regardless, right, it's a thin membrane, right? And right. there's other things that are thin, right? Leaky gut, leaky brain, blood-brain barrier, all of those things, leaky a bladder, like with interstitial cystitis. Yeah. So these kind of things are, they're connected in a lot of ways. Right. And, you know, a big mistake I see a lot of folks do when they move from allopathic medicine into more of a functional approach is we're looking for what can I do for a, and this is not how you asked it, so I'm not saying this, but this is a common mistake is what can I do for a person who has this condition?
Exactly.
Right. And that's not what we're looking at. You're what imbalances does this person have that caused them to have this? And yeah, there's genetic factors, et cetera, et cetera. But there's so much that can be done and they're not educated. And these are the kind of things that break my heart because 10 years ago, had people looked at, okay, what imbalances does she have? How are her fats? How are her nutrients, right? Nutrients that are required to build a strong membrane. What's going on? Does she have allergies? Does she have gluten intolerance? Does she have oxalate sensitivities? What is going on?
I'm glad you said that because that was the first thing that popped into my mind before I put her on a high vegetable diet because it's known that high vegetable diets are good for kidney disease. But having experienced having oxalate issues myself just recently on a high vegetable diet, I'm like, that's the last thing I want to do to her kidneys.
Yeah, so it's slow and steady, right? Because you know
that out right away.
Right? You can do a urine test, give a 24-hour urine test for oxalates or do an oat test, which would be even better because you're going to get so much more information.
Which is my question is how do I do an oats test? And now I'm not saying I'm a professional oats test person, you know, but this is
you can bring them to a call. Like you can do it and bring to a case study. Right.
Exactly. How can I get an oats test and a Nutrival on her to look at?
Yeah, so you go on my site. And okay. you go on the empowered side, the consumer side, and you click where it says lab testing. Now, I'm not encouraging people who have busy practices to go and order all their tests through me. We're just not set up for that. But individual practitioners can order a test here, a test there for yourself or your client. You go there and you click on where it says lab testing, and you're going to see a list of all the lab tests. And you go to Genova. Well, I would prefer to do Great Plains. For that, Great Plains will actually let you order direct. I believe.
That's what I was wondering. I thought you said there was a place where I could do my first five for a discount.
That's the Dutch.
That's the Dutch. Okay, mm-hmm. And
that's Precision Analyticals. If you go to set up an account with them, they'll write to me. They just did it yesterday. Two of you, I just said, yeah, it's fine. I think it was Karima. Did you do it? I think Karima had asked, and it was Anu. Yeah, so two of them, and they said, are these guys okay to order these tests? Here's the thing. If you're going to order a test through my account that you've never interpreted before, you'll learn, and they have videos, but you must bring it to a call.
I promise.
I can support you with that, right? Because I don't want you out there telling people things you shouldn't tell people.
Exactly. No,
right? So if I give you permission early on, when you're early on in the program, mm-hmm. then I need you to promise me you're going to come here.
Right. And of course I would because, you know, I feel actually more comfortable with the Dutch test than I do with the Nutrival because I just got my own
Nutrival. Nutrival is complicated.
I was like, oh my God.
And the oat test is included. So the Nutrival will include an organic acid, but it's Genova. And I want to say that, and I don't know if this is true, but I think that the oxalates are not included on the Genova. I think it's only on the Great Plains. There are a couple of differences. Yeah. They mostly have the same parameters.
About the Nutrival for Genova?
The Nutrival and the organic acid. Well, the Genova has the organics and it's right. included with the Nutrival.
Right. I just got that one and it does not have the organic acid.
Doesn't have the organic acids?
No, not that I can see.
You got the Nutrival?
I got the Nutrival FMV, I think it's called, and I also have an oats test. So that one, of course, I do have my organic acids from. That's the only reason I knew that I had a high level of
oxalates.
oxalates, but it wasn't like off the chart. It was the top end of normal. But then after I loaded myself up with oxalates.
Right.
And then
so
I
you're not somebody that now you have to do extremely low oxalate, but in general, you probably don't have to do extreme low oxalate. You can do a moderate and not be miserable in your life. But for now, yeah, it's extreme, and then you're going to gradually increase. But with those levels. And if you have to look, you have to look at genes too, because genes play in with this a lot. There's a whole slew of genes. The right. only lab report from your 23andMe raw data that shows it in a really nice graph is the metabolic healing. Metabolic healing shows you a nice page, and it shows you all the oxalate SNPs.
Oh, because I did that detox one you talked about, and that was
interesting. They don't have the oxalates on it. I'm going to have a conversation with her because I want her to add the blood sugar and the oxalate SNPs. And I'm sure she can do it. She just needs to do, you know.
Metabolic healing. That's the one.
Metabolic healing. They have, it's called True Report. It's towards the back. It's like the third to the last page in there. It's a nice report. There's no one report that's perfect. So a lot of times I run both. And then I just ordered my kit from Stratagene, which now runs, does the genetics as well. The Stratagene is a nice report, but it's limited. It doesn't have as many genes. It doesn't have oxalates and those sorts of things. It's mostly methylation and sulfation.
Okay, well, I'm getting a little bit mixed up because we're talking about me and this other gal.
But I'm just saying, you know, this is, I don't know how much testing she's going to be willing to do.
Pretty willing because she's got death knocking at her door.
Good. We see sometimes it takes that. So yeah. I would spend the $99 and run a 23andMe at this point.
She's already done that. She's
promised
to do a Nutrabelle. She'll do an oats. So
do it. Great.
I've got that metabolic healing book. So you're saying I should go to the True Report.
If you go to Metabolic Healing, and their report is True Report. If you just go to Metabolic Healing Genetics and do that search, it'll come up.
Genetics.
We have samples of those reports on the nutrigenomics area on the regular website, practitioner website. See, the cool part about it for you guys in NEPT, you know, we open the modules as you complete them because we don't want to overwhelm, but you have access to the Empowered Self-Care site. And if you're in level one, you get it for 6 months. If you're in the full program, you get it for 2 years. And when you go in there, you'll see all the programs. So if you're like, oh, I just got this client and I need to look at her genetics and I'm not going to get up to that module for a while, or I just had somebody with a thyroid issue, you just go in there. My consumer programs are very in-depth because my audience likes that. They're geeky, right? They want to know this stuff. So it's a great way for you to have the basics. And then when you get to that module in NEPT and go into like all the really, really deep stuff, then you're prepared because you've already got an outline. Right. So I would say for her, if she's already agreed to do a Nutrival and an organic acid, I would look at that. And then I would run those filters. I would run both the genetic detoxification and the metabolic healing on her. Okay. And then, you know, bring the results to the calls. But here's the thing. Look at the basic stuff you can get her going on. A big exception I have is the way a lot of functional medicine practitioners who come from allopathic medicine into functional, they run all these tests and they say, come back in a month or 6 weeks when.
Okay, well, listen up, because here's what I'm approaching her with, because I don't want to scare her because she's already this very timid person. It's kind of interesting energetically, if you think about kidneys and the timid fear.
Well, fear, right? It's all Chinese medicine. Kidneys are fear. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm already thinking about that. And I don't want to like blow her out of the water. And yet I've given her all these journal articles too, because I want her to see that I'm really good at gathering this data for her really quick. And this is stuff she can be educating herself on and what's out there and how I'm going to hone that in and bring it to her doctors. But then I've already said, generally speaking, you know, that you either have an oxalate issue or you don't. So I've already talked about that with her. If you don't, then we can go on a plant-based diet. But
go on a plant-based diet with oxalates. You just have to do low oxalates. Right. I just did a whole class on that, you know, a kitchen class on that. And I have, you know, the charts that say, you know, yeah, so don't eat spinach. Don't eat rhubarb.
Seems to me that it's still worth having a lower end oxalate intake, even if she doesn't show having oxalate.
I realized I was higher oxalate than I thought, but I just naturally gravitate away from spinach. I have a handful of spinach here or there, but that's not my main green. I do a lot of arugula.
Yeah.
No oxalates, right? I do dinosaur kale. And then I do all the lettuces, bok choy. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can give her that's low oxalate.
Right. So I've also told her that I see that she's eating wheat. So that's like number one to get off of that. And the dairy products, you know, that to start transitioning away from that. And I'm not trying to make it black and white, but then we do have a time frame to work with here.
So yeah, we do. She's going to die if she doesn't get this under control. It's a big motivator.
I'll put that out there right away. I haven't started with the blood sugar regulation yet.
No. So here's what you need to do. Look at her diet. Like, look at what she's eating.
I did.
And then one at a time. Don't give her too many at the same time. But then look at the genetics. Look at those HLA-DQ 2.2s, the CTLAs, and all those kinds of things that are related to gluten. And go, look, you got it. It's inflammation. We have to get the inflammation in your body under control. We cannot risk your kidneys being inflamed here.
Exactly. And that's how I put it to her, because with or without the genetics, it's still inflammatory food.
It's still inflammatory food.
Yeah. Right. So I just started with that, because we're not going to get her 23andMe back for 2 months.
Oh yeah. So, you know, so you start her right away. You say, this is what I found, and these are the basics.
Right.
Leave it out. We're going to put it back in later. In terms of blood sugar, you don't have to take her to the extreme of starting to test her, you know, and all that, but you get her as close, get all the crap out, get all the refined products out, get the sugar.
I told her it's not whole food, and if it comes in a package, don't eat it, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And if she's willing and open, which hopefully she is, because her life is at stake here.
Yeah. So her blood pressure's just started going up a little bit. They put her on a heart med, and then,
HeartMath brings it down. You know that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you can sit there in a session with HeartMath and watch somebody's blood pressure drop 30 points.
Oh, I know. I love it. I love it.
I love that. Right. So you know how to do those things and empowering her to take charge. I wish this was 10 years ago for her, but there's a lot you can do to slow down, if not reverse, some of this stuff. Now you got to be careful if she does go on dialysis, then you get into the how much protein can they have. And there's just so much you got to be careful of. So if you keep her off dialysis, it would be worthwhile. We did the last case study in January. Who was it that submitted it? I don't remember who submitted it. Somebody Claudia submitted a case that was a woman who was on dialysis, and she'd been on dialysis for the last 10 years. And so we went through a lot of the considerations on that. So if you want to go back to that, it would be the January case study call.
I think I got in on the tail end of that call and meant to go back and listen to the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be, you know, appropriate. This is somebody who's already on dialysis. So we were
Like in her hands and in her feet, she's having feelings of sharp shards of glass. So that's what really put my mind immediately up to the oxalate. I was like, oh my God, you know, like.
Right. And then you said pain, and that's inflammation. So getting the inflammation, getting all the inflammatory foods out, I would say, you know, not turmeric, but say curcumin extract could be helpful, because turmeric is high oxalate. You know, and looking at some of those proteolytic enzymes potentially, as long as she doesn't have like an ulcer, lots of stuff like that you can do. So healing the gut and the blood sugar, you know, you can do the overall, and, you know, some people don't need to be as extreme on the blood sugar as we get them to be, but these are good starting points. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. Judy, did everybody learn something from that? Oh, you don't know how to put your hand up, Leah. Okay, good. I'll get you next. Okay.
Yes. I just have a couple questions. First off, I was wondering if you would have any idea if someone has high ferritin and high platelets, what that could be a sign of, and then also what could you do nutritionally to decrease the levels?
Yes, so there's a lot here. It depends on what's the iron level, because iron ferritin should be both high or both low. And that's like, you know, iron excess or whatever. But if they're in different spheres, then there's something else going on. So is it both iron and ferritin high?
No, just the ferritin.
So the high iron is normal?
Well,
Or was it not tested? Because this is the
thing. No, I'm not sure if it was tested.
A lot of doctors don't test both. Used to be they only tested iron. Then they got smart and started testing ferritin and they dropped the iron. What they don't understand from a functional perspective is that if both of them are low, we have a clear state of iron deficiency anemia. If both of them are high, that's indicative of probably hemochromatosis, possibly polycythemia, which is too many red blood cells. So here's the numbers you need to look at. You need to look at the ferritin. The platelets are high. You got to look at the red blood cells. Are the red blood cell numbers high? Is the hematocrit high? Likely is if the red blood cells, but not necessarily. And then what's the iron, right? So what could this mean with high ferritin? Well, how high is the ferritin? Is it like moderately high, like 150? Is it 800?
No, it's right on the border.
Right on the border.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. So it's like, is this person genetically tending towards hemochromatosis, which is an excess ferritin and a buildup in the body, and it's dangerous? They're not at that danger level, but genetically you can look at those things if they have that. But I would look at, so the platelets, how high are the platelets? Is it borderline as well?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So a little bit high. So there's clotting happening. The platelets come in when there's a need for clotting. There's a lot to unpack here, right? Because you want to look at what's the risk factor for having that high. How is their lipid panel? How's their homocysteine? How is their C-reactive protein, right? With those elevated and high platelets, it means that there's a tendency to clot and they're more likely to have a thrombus form in the blood vessels, right? So what can you do? You gotta look at their diet. Again, if the iron is also high, it could be that, are they taking iron supplements?
Mm-hmm.
Right? No, they're not taking iron supplements. Mm-hmm. Are they taking any herbs that are high in iron, like yellow dock or nettles or things like that?
No.
Okay, so it's not from dietary sources. They're not just drinking like greens all day long and getting tons of iron that way.
Well, probably a lot of greens.
Okay, so you really need to find out this iron, right? Because you need to find out, is it an iron overload? Or is there a problem? Excess ferritin can be indicative of a liver inflammation.
Okay.
Right? Inflammation anywhere, but mainly liver, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what you want to look at. So now, again, it's opened up a can of worms, right? You got to look at their ALT, AST, alkaline phosphatase, LDH. Those are liver markers.
Right.
GGT, mm-hmm. right? And if those are elevated, is she on any medications?
Mm-hmm. No.
No medication. Uh-uh. Okay. So that's good to know, right? So all of those.
No medication, just thyroid.
Just thyroid. Okay. And are those thyroid numbers in control? Like, are they staying within the right ranges?
Well, what happened is the Nature Thyroid, they discontinued that. So then she switched to Armor thyroid.
Yeah. Now, but watch Armor, because it used to have gluten in it.
Yeah, I know. That's
and
why.
Corn.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But there was a recall on the Nature Thyroid.
Right. But there's Nature Thyroid, there's Armor, there's what's the other one called? Shelly, you may know. There's a third one. Nature Thyroid. There's another one. No, Levo is just T4. I'm thinking the ones that are the desiccated thyroid. And then there's a new one. And then the other thing she could switch to is a compound. T3, T4. And I often recommend that when I look at the numbers, some people on Nature Thyroid or Synthroid are not keeping their numbers. You have to look at the ratio between T3 and T4, right? And if that's off and there's too much T4 with relation to T3, you may have to bump up T3, but you can do that. Somebody that knows what they're doing needs to prescribe that bioidentical, because I'm really concerned, because somebody with a thyroid issue goes on Armor, right?
Right.
Had a hard time getting that word out. Armor. And now they're exposed to the corn or other grains or gluten that's in it. Now, I don't know for sure. I've looked at it many times, but I haven't looked at it more recently, now that hopefully some of these companies are realizing that gluten intolerance is so, so profound. And even that little bit can cause problems.
Okay. Yes. Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know. I appreciate that. And then also, I know that iodine is so important, but I'm wondering, how do you do iodine load on an individual to check to see if they're deficient on iodine?
Yep, there's a test. I like Hakala Lab, H-A-K-A-L-A, although they don't run in California, or you can do Doctor's Data. The reason I like Hakala is they send you the loading dose, a 50 milligram iodorol. They send it to you. Whereas if you're doing it with Doctor's Data, you have to have them go out and buy a bottle of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then just use it for the test, and they may not need it after the test. So that's a real easy test. It's direct access. They'll ship any country. They just can't ship to California for whatever crazy reasons. California created this law that they're not allowed to do it. But Doctor's Data will, and you can get the Doctor's Data if you go, I'm pretty sure if you go to our, that page, that lab testing page.
Okay.
Or you know what, the other place you can order Doctor's Data through is Direct Labs. They have a whole section on that stuff, okay?
That's great, thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, so we have Leah, lower hand, mute. Okay, Leah, where are you? Oh, there you are, unmute. You have to unmute. So I asked you to unmute. You just have to click the button to say unmute.
Sorry. Okay. So my question, actually I have like a lot of questions, but so in the energy module where you're talking about the Krebs cycle, mm-hmm. And cellular respiration, can you talk about how the different energy markers on the oat and how their connection in the Krebs cycle, how they connect to the Krebs cycle and the oat? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you
like
do
the first one is citrate,
isocitrate, et cetera, right? They don't measure all of the
right.
They just measure some. And typically what I do is I look at, like, if one is high and it's not converting down to the next one, you know, and the next one is either normal or low, then I would look at what are the cofactors that are required. So is it B6? Is it B2? Is it magnesium? And you can get a sense of where some of the blocks are. They may be high in fumarate, say, because it requires B6 and magnesium to convert to the next metabolite. And I will tell you, I don't have that chart memorized. Someday I will, I'll look at it enough, but I pull it up, right, every time that I'm looking at an oat test, I'm looking at that chart to see what are the nutrients that may be. And on the oat, they do give you a good explanation in the back, but it's really nice when you can actually see it biochemically, and you go, oh yeah, we gotta look at those places. Does that make sense?
Maybe I'll have to bring that to a case call. I just have a couple oats tests, and I'm figuring out how to, you know, connect these different markers, you know, the fumaric and the malic.
You don't even have to do it on a case call. You can do it in an open coaching, an NEPT open coaching call, but make sure you use the uploader to upload your stuff in advance and give us a little background on those people in the notes.
Okay. Or I'll maybe describe. it might make more sense when I am actually looking at, you know, a person, you know what I mean? Rather than just generalities, I guess.
Or are you looking at samples as opposed to real people? Yeah, but if you give me specific, because I'll ask you questions. So yeah, you can put it in on the case study thing, but you may not have a full case. You may be just looking at this, but either way, you can put it as a case study, or you can just upload it using the uploader, and we could do it on the next open coaching. And then I'll share it on the screen, or you can share it on the screen.
I'll do that. And then also, if you have somebody who can't tolerate high sulfur foods, like, how do you support them with this nutrient, you know, for their sulfation? Like, you know, certain genetics, you know, don't do well with sulfur foods. And
so that's, you know, theoretical. I just want to stop you there because, yeah, certain genetics have a tendency to not handle it. But it's also, you have to look at how do they respond and what kind of symptoms they have. So I'm really careful, like if somebody says, oh, look, you have this genetic tendency for not doing glutathione very well, and they want to just take glutathione. The problem is if they have some of those other sulfur genetics, then that when they take glutathione, especially if they take a lot of it, the body doesn't make glutathione anymore. And what the heck's it going to do with all those precursors? They get backed up and they create excess sulfates and sulfites in the system. And you can measure those in the urine, actually. You can get these little strips just like you can get for any kind of strips, and you can measure them in the urine and look at that. But yeah, so we can't just go by the genetics, but the genetics will say you may not handle high sulfur foods. And you ask, how do you do with garlic? How do you do with onions? How do you do when you eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables? And they're like, I feel fine. I'm not a problem. So then it's not that big a deal, right? Their genetic marker is not, or expressing in a way that's negative. But if they say, oh my God, yeah, I can't eat garlic. I can't eat onions. If I eat too much broccoli, I feel really wacky. Then you're looking at defining that job, that, the diet for that person in a way that's protective. If you look at, if you go and log into the Empowered Self-Care site, there's a, on the nutrition lab page, there's the elimination diet. I'm like, identify your food sensitivities. The very first one is preparing. And on there, I have this really cool chart. I guess I could just show you guys that will soon be finished. And I'm excited about that. Yes, Shelly. Yes. Thank you for getting the other one done. And I uploaded it already last night. So let me find it. Okay. So I need office hours. Let me go to Empowered Self-Care. And on the, actually this on this page too, if I scroll down on here, you're going to see, discover your food sensitivities, this page, the preparation phase. And I'll see if I can grab the link to it. It's actually a Google Doc so that we can update it and keep it updated. And I'll show you what happens when you click it and what that thing looks like. It's really cool. You go down towards the bottom and it says, oops, access the food religion's food guidelines. And it's going to ask you, well, it does this to me all the time. I don't know why. Okay. What it's going to say to you is, would you like to make a copy? And you have to say yes, because you're not allowed to have my original, because I don't want people editing it. That's happened to me in the past and I've had to protect it. So you say, make a copy. And then it just opens it up and it'll save it to your Google Drive. You can always download it. If you want it on your computer, you can just say download so you can save it on your hard drive. And there we go. So what you can do here is you look at sulfur. Okay, which foods are high in sulfur? Which foods are like yellow, which means that they're kind of moderate, and which foods are low and okay. So you can look at this and you can help them to tailor their diet, right? It doesn't mean that they have to do zero of the sulfur foods, but they have to moderate it, right? It's the amount they do over the course of the day. If they say, oh, even a little bit of garlic in here is really problematic for me, then you know, right? You just, that even a little bit, they're pretty sensitive, right? So you play around with these other foods. You start them on the ones that are green. And then you play with the ones that are yellow and see how much they tolerate it. And then you really avoid for a while or keep the minimal dose of the ones that are high. Okay.
Okay.
And you can do that for the, we're in the process of filling in the whites, but you can do that for pretty much any of these food constituents, right? Nightshades, salicylates, oxalates, et cetera. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Great.
How do you know if someone can take turmeric and like, say you've done a bunch of liver work, and what's a good indication that their phase one is keeping up with their phase two?
So whenever they try to do a cleanse, a detox, they feel worse, right? You get them to do juicing, or they say, I can't do intermittent fasting. If I go too many hours, I just start to feel like achy and headachy, and I don't feel good. That could be an indication. if they've ever tried like a cleansing, a juice kind of cleansing or some sort of a liver detox, and they feel worse before they feel better. There are certain nutrients like turmeric can help support that, and other nutrients can support that. So you're basically asking a lot of questions that way.
Okay.
Okay, I'll give you one more and then I'm going to go to Darcy and then we can come back. Okay.
Yeah, actually what Shelley was saying about the basement membrane disease.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest son, he has, every time he goes to the doctor, they always do a urine test and they're like, you have blood in your urine, but he doesn't have high protein or anything like that. His everything else looks perfectly normal. Like, how can I find out if that's something that is a issue for him? Like, what should I ask for?
Yeah, how long has that been going on for?
Well, I switched pediatricians about a year and a half ago to 2 years ago. And so the prior pediatrician did not do any urine tests. So he never had a urine test before the last year or two. So the first physical, she's like, you know, she had him wait till he was, you know, first morning urine, just get up, take it then, you know, and he still had the blood in his urine.
Okay, so how many times has it been tested?
I think four.
Okay, over what period of time?
And she said that it was familial and so the last two physicals he had with her, it showed up.
So are these physicals, and then she had him every year or two? So we're talking, this has gone on over a course of several years or 2 years. Okay. Yeah. So there's definitely, if it's still there. So, you know, we think about when we think of blood in the urine, we think about that there's some irritation to the lining of whether it's in the penis, whether it's in the ureters, whether it's in, you know, the urethra, but whether it's in the kidneys itself. It's very common with kidney stone as somebody's trying to pass a kidney stone. How old is your son?
He's 18.
Okay, so it's possible he has kidney. I was thinking, you know, little kids generally don't, but at 18, he could have a stone, right? That's trying to pass through and it's aggravating. Does he have any back pain, flank pain, any cramping, any kind of sensations like that?
He doesn't complain of anything.
There's just this blood in his urine. So
I'm sorry, the connection is really slow.
Yeah, I know. Like you stop, you're like halfway through sentences sometimes. So it's okay. I would say, you know, I would, if it's going on for 2 years, I would see if you can get an ultrasound of his kidney to see if there's anything going on, a KUB, you know, kidney ureter bladder is what it's called. You can do that ultrasound. I wouldn't x-ray, he's young. You don't want to get him exposed to x-rays if you don't have to, but just doing an ultrasound over that area to see if there's anything abnormal, anything malformed. A stone wouldn't necessarily show up on a it would show. I think it would. It's not, I mean, if you do an x-ray, you're just going to see calcification. So you would see it if it's a stone and enlargements and that kind of stuff. But I think an ultrasound would give you an idea of what's going on down there to see if there's a problem. I would also, if I were you as a mom, I would get some urine strips. You can get them for like $11 or $12 on Amazon. So they're just, you know, urine strips, basically. Test strips that you can test his urine and he can start testing it and seeing if there's variations in here. Is he sexually active? Possibly. No. Okay. Then, you know, we don't have to worry about things like, you know, sexually transmitted diseases or other things like that. But if it's been going on for 2 years, starting at 16 to 18, I would look at that to see what's going on. I would look and do an ultrasound. And I would, if I were you, I'd want to know on a regular basis and give him the empowerment of, here's your strips. Let's just test it every day. See if it comes and goes. See if there's certain activities that aggravate it. Is he an athlete? Does he do like a pounding kind of stuff? You know,
a hockey player, ice hockey.
Has he had any blows to that area? Anything hit by a puck or a stick or?
I mean, in the past, he It could be.
Might have, right? He might have. Yeah, those are the things I would do to monitor this.
Okay. He does have strips because he's taken a college class, a bio class, and one of their experiments was they had to get urine strips and test their urine. And of course, the color indicated that he had blood in his urine again, you know.
The strips you want to get a comprehensive strip. It's going to have protein, it's going to have nitrates, it's going to have the blood itself, it's going to have any signs if there's like signs of infection. So they're inexpensive. It's worthwhile to have. I mean, you probably have to buy all of them every
that's
year.
That's it.
Don't last, right? And you look at all that stuff on a regular basis. But I would say probably an ultrasound. If he's continuing to have blood in his urine, you know, there's something. It could be something. You don't know whether it's low down or high up, right? If they're seeing a color change, it may not be microscopic blood from, you know, some irritation. It might be some actual irritation in there. So you don't want to find out years later that this was something you could have, you know, understood what's there. And, but like her client with the kidney, right? You wait 10 years and find out after it's continued to progress. Okay. And it might be a stone, you know, a lot of people have stones without the pain. Right. Yeah. Or gravel, you know, oxalates, going back to that. Right. It could be an oxalate thing that there's some gravel, some little stones that are aggravating and causing it. They do cause pain usually, but he's young, right? He's an athlete. He gets battered around. He probably doesn't even notice pain most of the time.
He's never complained about anything, but I know that I have a lot of oxalate issues and genetics. I've had Oates test my genetics. Everything indicates, you know.
So it could be an oxalate sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
You all need to know about oxalates is if someone in Shelley found out this really the hard way is like when you are on a high oxalate diet or a moderate oxalate diet, you don't want to just go all the way down and get rid of them altogether because you have this syndrome called oxalate dumping, right? The body goes whoop, 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 and you get worse, right? So, you know, you just look at, does he eat a lot of spinach? Does he eat rhubarb? Does he eat a lot of almond butter? Does he eat, there's a lot of things, chia seeds and things like that, that are high oxalate that can add up, right?
Yeah, I have experience with that, and I had my oxalate chart on the fridge for probably a year.
Okay.
I am familiar with that. Do you find that either magnesium citrate or calcium citrate works better? Like, because I've been using.
I usually do a combo with the meal. I just do a CalMax combo, CalMax citrate with the meal, and have them take it with the meal. The other thing is B6 is important for, and B6 magnesium for dragging it out. So the calcium magnesium that you take during a meal that has high oxalate is not going to be systemically utilized very well because it's all going to be pulled out with the oxalates. But then away from meals, you would do B6 and magnesium. It can be citrate, it can be glycinate. It doesn't matter much which the form is. It's just getting the magnesium in there to help pull it out. And that can be helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
Good questions. Okay, Darcy.
All right. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I just wanted to follow up about the iodine test, and I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on the skin, you know, doing the iodine skin test. I know it's subjective, but I know for me years ago when my kinesiologist, chiropractor, wacky doctor, he did it on me, and, you know, I absorbed it so fast. It was very clear I was low. And so I personally keep using it just for myself to see if it's gone by the end of the day to give me a measure if maybe I need a drop.
Maybe you need to do more. I used to do it all the time, right? I was one of those wacky doctors that did it all the time. It is subjective. So if you have somebody who's darker skinned, you know, you don't see it as well. It got kind of poo-pooed and came down in favor in the naturopathic community for a while. It's certainly in the medical community, you know, you're wacky, but you know, when you think about it, right, if you put something on your skin and you know, 5 hours later, it's gone, it's absorbed. And then as you keep doing that, what I would teach people to do is put it on your skin. As soon as you see it gone, you put it on again and you just keep doing that. What we'd see is like, it would extend. Right? Suddenly it would be going, oh, wow, I'm going 12 hours now. Wow, I'm going 24 hours now, right? So from a perspective of how the body works and from a functional perspective, I think that it can be a helpful test. It is hard because you have somebody who's tan or they're, you know, Asian or, you know, Black or whatever, right? You're not going to see it as well. So it's hard to determine, but I would certainly continue to use it on yourself if you find it useful, especially if then you start to see it's expanding, okay. Right? You know, you just got to be careful what you do with other people. If you're doing a test that's kind of poo-pooed and they're going back to their doctor and they're saying, oh, she said I'm blowing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful. Well, okay. So another question, vitamin C, if someone is eating high vitamin C foods, taking in good diet, is now starting liposomal vitamin C, and there's, I don't know what the levels are, but I just remember that they're low. I'm thinking down the road, what things should I be looking at next if they're still low?
If they're, how are you measuring that they're low?
She did a blood test. That's all I know.
A blood test for vitamin C?
Yeah.
I don't know of a blood test for vitamin C.
Yeah, I didn't either. But she said, my doctor said my vitamin C levels are low. And I
mean, there's some things on the functional that could suggest that she might be low. Inflammatory markers, right? Histamine levels. Histamine is really tied into vitamin C. But if she is, since she's not taking, the best way to determine the amount of vitamin C somebody should take is with the vitamin C calibration. Yep. And you just do that and you have access to it. It's on the Empowered site in the section with the nutrients, right? So yeah. I would do the vitamin C calibration because she may not be taking. You may do great on 3 grams a day of vitamin C. This other person may need 8 grams a day of vitamin C. Okay. So how much is she currently taking? Liposomal will get better absorbed, right? And you usually need less. But going back to oxalates, you do have to be careful of too high a level of vitamin C because some of that can get converted to oxalates.
That's what I was wondering if maybe was happening with her because she does have oxalate issues. So I took her off of oxalates and she's feeling better.
Okay. So I find that, you know, I'm always erring on the side of caution with the C is like, I try to stick to 3 grams or less.
Okay.
And spread out throughout the day, like 1 gram 3 times a day, and then watch, you know, it's watching and seeing how the symptoms are. The research is mixed on it, right? Like, yeah, in theory, of course it can convert, but in reality, it may not in everybody based on what's going on. And the other thing is looking at their SNPs too. There is a vitamin C SNP. And if they have, you know, homozygous on that, they're going to need more than most people. And like everything else, it's like, I think we have to take the information from the tests and the genes, and then we go cautious with certain things. And then we just gradually like bump it up to see where their tolerance level is. Okay. So you may not want to run a vitamin C calibration on this person if they do have oxalate issues. That might be too much. That might put them over the edge.
Okay. Well, and I just always go back to genetics. So then I'm like, okay, I need to learn these genetics. I need to get them down.
Yep. There's a lot there. There's a lot to learn and you're never going to stop learning. I mean, I'm learning stuff all the time, right?
Encouraging. Yeah. Okay. So last one, if you have a person who is not a good pill taker, supplement wise, they need to be doing all the good ACE, DE, Ks and Bs, but I just can't get them to be consistent. Would you
pills
recommend?
Suck. Let me just tell you, I hate pills. I want to take pills. I don't think they're absorbed as well. I think compliance is lower. I think it aggravates the stomach because then the stomach has to break down all these cellulose that's on the pills. So they're all available in liquids or powders. So vitamin D, vitamin D liquid, vitamin E liquid, vitamin A liquid, real easy to get, K liquid, the B's powders. And there's a company that sells, it's called Bulk Supplements. I mean, there's a lot of like your regular companies that sell the powders, but these bulk supplements.com is just about everything. I recently got people on P5P, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, B6, that is from Bulk Supplements, and they can tailor their amounts. I don't have to say, well, some companies sell them in 25 milligrams and some they're 50 and you need somewhere in between that. They don't have to take too much. They don't have to take too little. You can taper them up with the powders. There's also liquids in the bees too.
Well, because she was talking about making things liposomal and I thought, well, at first, maybe that's a good idea. But then I got to thinking how much simpler lecithin she's going to have to take in order to.
There is a way to do it. And we actually have on the site a video, and it's from somebody that did taught you how to do it. And you basically, you have to, it's time consuming. They have to be dedicated to do it. You have to get the little ultrasonic machine. You've got to get the sunflower lecithin, and it only lasts 3 or 4 days. So you can only make 3 or 4 days supply at a time. You can't make like a month's supply and stick it in the fridge like if you buy it commercially.
Well, can you mix a bunch of your vitamins together in that and do them at one time? I haven't got to researching that yet.
You know, I don't know for sure. I haven't seen anything written on that, but I can imagine that you should be able to.
You can make a batch, you know, for 5 days.
Well, 3 to 4, not even 5. It's really not. And it's the capacity of the machine. But certainly if she's ambitious and wants to try it, she can try that.
Okay, so then
Here's the thing I keep thinking about.
Yeah.
Like I see B12 liposomal, I see folate liposomal. I haven't seen B6 liposomal. I haven't seen B2 or 3 or 1 liposomal. Is that because nobody feels like there's a market for it and it's expensive? Or is it because maybe it's been tested and not effective? So I have not researched that aspect.
Okay, and what about patches? Are those?
Yeah, patches are a great alternative. Okay. There's a company called PatchMD that has some. They have a whole variety of them. There's a company, I can't remember, Health Vitality or something, that I've gotten B12 and D3 from. But the one that has the biggest variety is this PatchMD. And again, unfortunately, they don't always have all the individual ones. They have combinations. Oh, here's the sleep formula. Here's the antioxidant formula, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good idea to try it. There's no real way to know if she makes her own without an extended period of time to see if some of her signs of deficiencies are going on.
I kept thinking that if she could be consistent, at least with the vitamins, she would see and feel better enough to have the energy and the stamina to go to those next steps.
Well, you can just get them in powders and liquids, you know, liposomal, wherever you can get them. You can get liposomal. I think it's either liposomal or it's micellized with the fat solubles. They're either micellized or liposomal. And then you can do the powders, and she can just make one drink. That's how I do it. I hate taking pills. I don't take pills. Every now and then I'll take pills for something like an acute, like, oh, I feel like I'm getting a cold, but usually I'm spraying and I'm powders. I take my stuff and I put it on, I muscle test. I do the wacky thing and I go, oh, do I need this now? Oh, no, I don't. Oh, yes, I do. And then I make my concoction. I put it in a cup. I have one of those. I have this thing. I got one up here too, that I stir it around with, and then I scarf it down. And I do this. I don't take my vitamins every day, but I would if I had an issue, right? If I just take it for maintenance, right? So I just do that and I test and I see what I need. And I have all kinds of liposomals and powders and potions, and I just test them all, put them together and take them.
Okay. Okay. That's helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Great.
Appreciate Thank it. You, Darcy. Good questions. Okay. So mute, lower hand. And then we have Shelley.
Hi, I've been missing you. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I had a lot of those similar questions, so that's really good.
Okay.
I wanted to ask really quick before I forget, I wanted to ask you this. For the certification test for the final, you have it mentioned that we're supposed to do a video using YouTube. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that before, but is it possible just to do a Zoom video, or does it matter?
You can do it and then upload it to YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just easier for us. I mean, if you give us a link, that's going to be, we need a link that we can just click it and watch, right? So we usually, you can do it on Zoom and then you upload it to YouTube.
Okay.
Right. So you got to be careful if you give us a link and then if you have it, your Zoom account set, that it deletes them after X number of days or weeks or months, right? Then they're gone. Then we can't like refer back to it. So we prefer something like YouTube.
Okay.
It's really easy. I mean, do you have a YouTube account?
No, but what my concern is that if I've already started with this person, does it need to be the first interview, or can I go back over it? Because there's so much to cover with this person. Yeah, or I can get it.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, here's what we're looking at. We're looking at your ability to ask the right questions, create rapport with the person. right? And I don't want you to sit there and go, okay, let me ask you these questions. That's not what you would do, right? It has to be like you're creating this relationship with a person. You see, even if you're a couple of sessions in, but you have so many more questions to ask this person, right, you're gonna go, Mary, it's so great to see you again. I have some things that I want to share with you. Or, you know, you don't have to catch the beginning, maybe where you do chit chat and you go, how does it feel? How's the symptom or whatever, whatever, you just catch it. We only want what, 20 minutes of it, 15 minutes, something like that.
Okay.
And it's just really to make sure that you're comfortable. And if you don't, you know, if somebody turns in a video and, you know, it's their first time, they've never done it, we'll sit down and we'll say, hey, here's how you can make this better. This is going to help you to, you know, pass the test, but also this is going to make you a better practitioner. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's mostly the video that has me more nervous than anything.
You can do it. You can do it. Yeah. Yeah. For a lot of people, that's true. But you know, you're in a relationship with people, right? They're looking at you. You're looking at them. Whether you're doing it face to face or are you meeting with her on Zoom anyway?
Yeah.
There you go. Right.
You already said
like you have to ask them permission, and they're suddenly now they're on Zoom instead of in your office.
She's so meek and quiet, and I've never met her personally. She doesn't say very much. So it's like, I'm trying to create a relationship.
This is good, because this is a good test for you, right? And here's the thing. You've got to meet people where they're at.
Right.
Like if I'm get on the phone with somebody who's like, blah, 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 I'll be blah, 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 because that's my personality.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm on the phone with somebody and I detect that meekness, I'm just going to meet them where they're at. I'm going to talk.
And that's kind of what's happening. And I guess it's making me uncomfortable, because you guys know me, I'm a blabbermouth, but I wasn't always that way. But my point is, with her, I tend to be more shy because she's being shy. And so it's like how to get her to feel comfortable with me. And maybe by the time we do the recording, she'll feel more comfortable. And then I can start her in on the heart math, and we can delve into that, and we can do a little bit of variety of things.
Right.
So, back to some other questions though, regarding alkalinizing, when you're someone that has oxalates, so that you're trying to not have your calcium precipitate out and form the stones. I get the concept of it. I get the physiology, but implementing it for me is actually hard. And now I'm thinking about where that pans out for this person with the kidney also. It's kind of interesting that I would have this client right now. But anyway, I keep thinking about how healthy bicarb is, and how with dialysis they give people bicarb. And so, like, at the same time, I've read that magnesium can be toxic for people with kidney, like end-stage kidney.
And that's the thing with kidney. You've got to do the research on that before you recommend any supplements. Exactly. And like you said before, getting on board with the doctors, because the levels, like we were on this call and I'm like, huh, they told her to have high protein. So I started looking at, well, there's a ratio. It's not like high protein. It's more. So this poor woman was eating cheese to get her protein. She was vegetarian, so she didn't do animal stuff, and she was eating cheese and soy and, oh my God, all kinds of garbage stuff to get, because they told her a very incomplete story, right? They didn't tell her what she really needed to do.
Yeah,
so
you
have to be careful, right? You have to, and this is the thing, when somebody has one particular condition and they also have another condition, it's creating a plan that adapts to both. And it may not be what you ideally want to do for the low oxalates, but or for the kidney or whatever. But with the kidney, if they're on dialysis or it's threatened to go on dialysis, you have to be super careful to protect them.
Right. So I feel like we're teetering, and I really need to get that appointment with the doctor, and they need to be proactive enough to get me a true dietitian that's up on their stuff as well. But
that's hard to find.
They're not really preventative minded. So here I am, the novice in terms of renal, and I know enough to know what's potentially dangerous. So I can't really even, like you said, make suggestions until I know how it relates to her kidney function.
Right.
Where she's at.
Right. And a lot of it is because a lot of the restrictions are when they're on dialysis versus before, because, you know, what the dialysis is doing, what it's dragging out, what it's putting in. So I don't think it's as restrictive. You do have to watch protein. You can't go high protein with somebody with a kidney problem, right? You can't do high vitamin C or, you know, things that are things that are acidic foods. But I mean, you can get so much progress with somebody by getting them on like an 80% alkaline diet and, you know, moderate protein, enough protein, but not too much. And then the nutrients they need and get the crap out of their diet. You guys, it's amazing how much progress you can see with somebody just by spending a couple of weeks getting the crap out.
Right.
This is why people do so well on fasts or like juice cleanses or detox. It's not so much that the juice is this miraculous thing. It's what they're not doing because they're on these detox programs.
Right.
Yeah.
So could I ask just relative back to me again, they have me taking famotidine and that's an acid blocker. And they have me on like 3 or 4 different antihistamines. And I'm finding that I don't want to take all those. I actually stopped, but then some of my old symptoms came back. So now I'm trying to find like, okay, is there a sweet spot or is there something else I could do instead of taking the famotidine? Because I don't want to-
The acid blocker, you know, do you really have excess acid? It probably not. You probably have low acid.
Exactly.
Right. And so that's going to, and what that does is it's going to potentially cause you to have more reflux because now you're blocking the acid. We have low acid. It blocks the lower esophageal sphincter. It makes it loose. So things can reflux up. So what's the purpose of the acid blocker?
I think they're just trying to create a situation where I have less histamine, but I was getting a lot of cramps and pain. Where's my list of symptoms here? Here we go. So without the antihistamines, I get migraine, vertigo, and diarrhea.
Yeah, I have no problem with the antihistamines. And I think you can transition from the antihistamines to more of natural as much as possible, right? But
quercetin.
And also the DAO and things like that.
Right. So the problem is if I take the famotidine, then my memory gets impaired and I have this like anticholinergic type of response happening where I'm just like, I even have some SNPs for choline. So I used to take choline actually. So, and it's actually in one of my integrative therapeutics products too. So,
Here's the thing that I would suggest, I can't tell you what to do. I can't tell you, you know, this is not medical advice, but if I were in your situation, my concern with the acid blocker is you're blocking your protein absorption.
Yep.
You're blocking your mineral absorption. And you need all these things to be healed, right? So Is there a way to talk to your doctor about just lowering that dose and seeing what happens? But also if the acid, you know, you can look at things like things that heal the mucous membrane. You can look at some of those things. Yeah,
the glutamine and the arabinose, I'm taking that. Like I'm slowly, you know, putting more things in that I probably should have had before, but never needed. So I wasn't really, you know.
Yeah. And be careful with glutamine if you have GAD SNPs, the biggie.
It hasn't seemed to affect me. So far.
Not everybody, but it's just that's a caution.
I might have 1 or 2 SNPs, but I don't think I've got 8.
I have like 8, so don't take glutamine. I just heart math it all the time, right? Heart math's super important if you have GAD SNPs, especially.
Yeah.
But you can look at, you know, like what happens if you wean off with the permission of your doctor.
I did it anyway. I just stopped taking it for 3 days, but that's what I'm saying. Then I started getting vertigo and feeling
the histamines or the other? You started
when I went off of all the histamines because I just felt like I needed to see where I was at.
Okay, but here's what happened. You went off of all the antihistamines and the acid blocker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying if those symptoms occurred, it probably because of going off all the antihistamines. Mm-hmm. So I would keep on those antihistamines.
And just try going off the famotidine.
And then try going off or going down. Is it 1 a day that you take? How many do you take of that?
4.
Okay, so now you go down to 3 for a few days. Mm-hmm. This is how we always have to remember. Every time you add something or take something away, low and slow, low and slow. Just repeat that over and over again, low and slow. You decrease things slowly, you add them in slowly. Because if you just stopped everything, you don't know what caused you to have those symptoms,
mm-hmm.
right? You gotta get the histamines under control.
I felt like it was a cumulative too little histamine. You know what I mean? Like I need some histamine.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's what I would do. I would talk to your doctor. What's the downside of me going off?
They don't know anything. They keep telling me that I know.
I'm just saying this.
They really say that.
You can do what you want.
Yeah.
I have to say, talk to your doctor about weaning off of it. Do you get me? Okay.
It's code. It's a code.
Yeah, I get the code that you're saying. I'm just saying that literally
they don't know. I know they don't know.
Yeah.
I know they don't know.
Yeah, right? They don't.
And when you're speaking to your clients, as much as you know the doctor doesn't know, you have to say,
okay,
speak to your doctor, wean right. off of it, find out the weaning, get their, sometimes you can get their permission and say, look, I just want to wean off of this. I'm going to go to three, then I want to go to two. You just tell them
yeah.
what you're going to do. Right. If they scream and, you know, if you go off antidepressants all at once, you have such a horrible rebound. So you can't do that.
Right.
You can't do that. So, and with anything, if your body's used to a certain level of a medication or a supplement or anything, and you just take it off dramatically, cause a problem, mm-hmm. like same thing, like you take out oxalates, right? You get a rebound. Yeah. So what I would suggest you do is, you know, go back on your antihistamine, go back to what your doctor told you to do, mm-hmm. and then take away one at a time of that and just double check that that's, you know, not going to get you into trouble anyway. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. We can't just like, this sucks, I'm going to get rid of it. We can't treat the body that way because there's gets used to it. And your goal would be to then look at the antihistamines you're on, research them, see which ones of them are the least or the most toxic, mm-hmm. and then look at a plan for getting rid and look at the mechanisms, right? If you're on three and they all have slightly different mechanisms, your best approach with them might be, you know, one at a time, slowly decrease each one while you're adding in extra quercetin DAO. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think they don't even know how ketotifen, I've called three different pharmacists. So some of the time they don't even know how it works. And
you go on drugs.com, you look up mechanism of action.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I lose sleep at night sometimes because the system is busted. We need to be part of the solution, okay? So I'm going to go back to, Karen has her hand up and then Darcy has it up again. And then Leah, if you still have more, you can put your hand up again because I know you had a long list. Okay. So Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
I had gotten your resource, the physical exam interpretation guide, mm-hmm. and I have some tongue questions. Okay. So one of the little pictures on the end, it had the little impressions of the teeth, and you had put that it's unabsorbed nutrients. So can you just talk about that for a second?
So the swollen when you have teeth, it's usually the tongue is swollen. So when you just have normal clamp down, you're pressing into it. In Chinese medicine, they look at that as spleen and stomach qi problems, because those are like controlling the digestive tract. I look at it too as there's some maybe food allergy that is causing the tongue to get swollen. And so when you have allergies, you have malabsorption. So that's what could lead to that, malabsorption of nutrients.
And then I half understand this, but it's like, you know, if somebody, doesn't have a great indican level and maybe, you know, and I know that's indicative that your fats and carbohydrates aren't going to be, you know, broken down and absorbed too well either, assimilated. So if that's happening and you give, so if someone's not able to absorb real food and we give them a supplement, how is giving them a supplement going to make the absorption, how is it supporting that? Like if it's digestive enzymes or something, I guess I'm not fully understanding because I'm like, well, if it's not absorbing the real stuff, why is the supplement going
to
make?
Yeah. So you have to differentiate between absorption and digestion, right?
Different
phases. Digestion starts in the mouth, amylase and teeth, break it down, goes down in the stomach, the pepsin and, you know, pepsinogen causes the pepsin, starts the breakdown of protein, and then all goes down into the duodenum where a lot of that stuff is broken down. So now they're hopefully, if digestion is working well, you've got all these little nutrients that can be absorbed and there's different spots. And when you get into level two with micronutrients, we have a very good explanation for each of the nutrients, which part of the system is it digested in? So you can usually kind of indicate, oh, look, like B12, for example, it's absorbed way down in the lower part, by the ileocecal valve. But it requires good stomach capacity because you need intrinsic factor. So when you know and you understand how these nutrients work, you can kind of get a sense of where in the tract it might be broken. But then there's absorption. So most of the digestion occurs in the duodenum, mouth, stomach, duodenum. Then it goes down to the jejunum, and that's where most of the absorption. A few things get absorbed in the duodenum. MCT and liposomal nutrients will get absorbed up in the duodenum because they don't require the digestive process. They just go through and they go through things called chyromicrons, and they get into the system and they get carried around. So the problem if they're not absorbing is different than if they're not digesting, right? So if they're not digesting well, giving specific nutrients that are already broken down and they're pulled out, they're not in the food, can be helpful. But guess what? You put them in capsules, they're cellulose. If they have a digestion issue, they may not break down the capsules, which is why we see a lot of people when they do x-rays, they see pills, tablets, and capsules in their colon.
Wow. Right?
Does that make sense? So there's multiple, and we go through all of that in the digestion module. You'll have a really good picture and the new micronutrients module.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I mostly understood that. So, so like, I know you mentioned earlier to go into the unstoppable page for like some of the things for the food sensitivities. So that's kind of a place to start for that.
Yeah.
And then, so how do you help the body absorb things better?
Well, it depends on why it's not absorbing, right?
Right.
So if they, like, say, for example, somebody has gastric bypass and they're missing good chunks of their stuff, I have them, before they eat the food, I have them break it down into their nutrients because they have a very short window, very short period. I mean, the intestine's huge, right? And they should have all these feet of dozens of, like 22 feet of absorption. Well, not all of it's absorption, but a lot of it is. And so things progress through. The other thing, I just thought of this too, is if they have rapid transit time, right? If they have an irritable gut, they're not going to be going through as quickly as they would. So how do you help them to absorb better? You figure out why, right? Is there an irritation? Do they have leaky gut? Now, people think about leaky gut and everything's going in, but the problem is that the toxins and the allergens go in, the undigested stuff, but the vitamins themselves, there's actually active transport. And you'll see that in the micronutrients module about how some of them need certain transporters and they have to latch on and they have to go through. Well, those get damaged too in a leaky gut situation.
Mm.
Does that make sense? So there's a lot to it, and it's really a matter of how do you best, you know, if you're trying to get nutrients in them, the patches, the topicals tend to work. Liposomals tend to work really well for most people because they will get in right at the top and they don't require all the digestive enzymes to break them down.
Yeah, I mean, my tongue is like that, you know, it has the dents and I took the Genova IP, but the thing is, I think my bugs ate all the sugar on the way down. So how can I have more food sensitivities as I get older? And then it shows that I'm okay. All my markers were in the green. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. So,
yeah.
But I think, you know, some markers on my GI map showed that my bugs probably ate it on the way down and it didn't really get to do
right.
What it was supposed to.
Yeah, that's a tough test. There's other tests you can do. I like the Cyrex Labs. I think it's array 3 or 4. It's one of those. It's intestine 2 or it's one of them. It's 2, 3, or 4. I know it's not 1 or 5. That's the intestinal permeability. And they're measuring zonulin and LPS, lipopolysaccharide. So they're measuring different things. And that's helpful.
Yeah, I had the zonulin add-on for my GI map and it was high. So
Yeah. So those are breaking down. So the GI one, the one from Genova is actually early technology. It's an older one that's been around probably 25 years. I mean, maybe not that long, but I know I remember learning that one really early on in my practice. And then they made it difficult because you can't, the lactulose and manulose, you can't get them unless you have prescribing rights. So you can't get somebody to order that for you unless they're a PA or an NP or, you know, an MD, those kind of people. Like I used to be able to order that test as a chiropractor. They stopped being able to, it's because they wouldn't send you the stuff. You had to have a prescriber to do that.
Because it just came when I did the Genova one, it just came with it.
Did you order it through FDN?
I'm trying to, I had to have, yeah.
Because if you ordered it through FDN, they have an MD sign off on it.
But I can get it through DHA labs now.
Really? Maybe they changed the rule on that.
Yeah. That's why I like going through DHA because, you know, I get the same rates without the medical director fee. So
cool.
You know, but there was another tongue too. I just had a quick question on. So it was the, excuse me. It says chronic vata, the cracks. So it says derangement in colon. Can you talk about that for a
moment? You know, that's an Ayurvedic. So I combined some of the Chinese medicine. Vata is that skinny, really, you know, rapid movement tends to be a cold constitution. And so if they have like a high vata imbalance, then that's what the tongue is supposed to look like. That's about as far as I can get to.
Yeah, because
that implies that the vatas have very poor digestion because they're cold and they're just too rapid. And they're usually in that constitutional description, they don't have good digestive stuff.
Yeah. Cause I didn't have any of those. I just had the dents on the side and now I'm starting to get those and I'm like, oh no. So
well, if you've had chronic, you may not have to have a vata constitution to have that. But if you have this issue and you're malabsorbing, then that can build up over time.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I just got my oat back and my blood spot fatty acid. So I have my appointment with the doctor on Thursday. So hopefully
I'll
find some stuff.
Blood spots give you so much great information. So much great. If you want to just bring one to a call and show, you know, share it on your screen.
We'll Which call can I bring it to?
You can bring it to the open coaching.
Okay.
Right. And usually on the case studies, we just do big cases. But if you just have a quick question on one of those, I can usually handle it at the end.
Okay.
Or if somebody doesn't show up, like somebody, or if nobody submits cases, and then we can just do random stuff on those.
Yeah, I can. I have it.
Because blood spots are fun to go through because there's so much you learn. I mean, we have a whole module on blood spot fatty acids, and I have dozens and dozens and dozens of test samples that I go through. It's a great inexpensive test that gives you a lot of great information right from the start.
Yeah, most of it was kind of odd. Most of my omega-3s were kind of in the green, but then my sixes were horrible. So.
Yeah, and it's the ratios. And then you have to look at the activity of the delta-6 desaturase enzyme, which does the conversions. And it gives you so much because there's so many vitamins and minerals that are responsible and involved in that pathway. Delta-6 desaturase is the conversion from the short chain omega-3s or 6s into the longer chain. So if somebody has a high alpha-linoleic acid, right, and they have low DHA and EPA, you know that, number one, they're probably not taking those as supplements, but number two, they have a deranged delta-6 desaturase. So you're looking at B vitamins and vitamin C, and there's a whole chart on the site about that. I actually showed that chart somewhere recently. I don't remember where. Where did I show it? It's in a lot of places. It's in the inflammation module. It's in the omega-3s. And it's in the blood spot fatty acid interpretation session.
So just kind of in general, what is the best test that you like to use to assess mineral levels?
That's a good question because, you know, I don't really find that there's great tests for that. I actually use a taste tester. Body Bio used to create this kit, and I haven't been able to find it recently, but it's basically like a zinc tally test, but they have like a kit of 8 different minerals that you can taste test. And I've used that in the past to see. If I see a lot of different minerals out of balance, I'm not focusing on the individual minerals. I might just give them a multi-mineral to take for a while. I'm focusing on low stomach acid.
Oh, right? Yeah, I actually did get that in the summer, the little Body Bio
thing.
Yeah, I didn't try it yet, but I got it in the summer.
Well, give it a try, because if you show up, like I used to do that when I did face-to-face with folks, and I would test that early on, like maybe the first or second visit. And if they came up with like 2 or 3, I would make a mixture. I made it easy for them. I shouldn't have. It was so much work for me, but I'd make them a mixture of the minerals and give it to them to take. If they showed up with 7 or 8 or 6 or 5 even, I'm like, you got low stomach acid. We have to work on your stomach acid, and then we'll work on the low stomach acid.
And then for vitamins, as far as testing, the oats has some vitamins on there, right?
It's got some. I mean, the NutriVal has all of them, actually. SpectraCell has a lot of the vitamins and minerals. But I like to look at functional, right? I like to look at zinc, alkaline phosphatase being low on just a regular blood test will often indicate a zinc problem. For the B12s and all, I don't really like serum B12. I like to look at MCV, homocysteine, and then if you know we want to spend extra money, methylmalonic acid. That's the gold standard, right? The homocysteine and MCV could be B6, it could be B12, it could be folate, but it also, like the MCV is usually not 6, usually the MCV is just those two, but like for homocysteine, but also if you look at the chart, where did I show this chart recently? Oh, it was one of the videos I made for the advanced lipid. I was redoing a video. But it can be more than B6, B12, and folate when you look at the genetic chart, because B2, B3, magnesium, there's a lot of different places where you can get that buildup of homocysteine. So those aren't specific for specific nutrients, but serum levels are not that great. The fat solubles are usually pretty good in the serum, you know, the A and the K and the D. But the others I like to either do functional or like RBC magnesium, much better. What's the other one? RBC, some of them RBCs and some of them WBCs. I have to create a chart, a reference chart like that I can have, you know, but it's all in the micronutrients. I just kind of look it up if I'm not sure, or look on the charts for like NutriVal usually tests them in the right place.
Okay.
Right. They'll test them in the place that they think they're the most accurate. So if you really want to do that, NutriVal is a good test. Okay. It's just expensive. It's like $600. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people aren't willing to do it. And here's the thing. Before I test people's nutrients, I look at their diet. And if they're coming in on a crappy diet, if they're, you know, eating fast food quick, they're not going to have good digestion. They're not going to have those nutrients. So I work on their diet and eating behaviors before I run in expensive tests on them. And then if they're still suspicious, then I'll go and do those tests. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Darcy, you're up again. We are 1 minute, quick.
I was just gonna ask, if you want to master the oats test and just understanding all of the pieces, what do you recommend?
Couple of things. One is to join NEPT and go through the whole functional assessments mastery stuff, and join NEPT and then come to all of our case study calls because we go over them a lot. And the other option is you go over the samples that they have on like Genova or Great Plains and watch whatever videos they have.
Okay. Yeah, because I found that it's kind of hard to find all the pieces, but that's kind of what you got to do, I guess.
It's what you got to do. So for Shine, we're going to be opening Shine up for registration on Wednesday, and it's going to be the April 16th. But we're going to offer a VIP upgrade where for an extra, I don't remember how much it is, but you're going to get access to all the recordings. Plus, you're going to get access to two special presentations. One's being done by Lisa Filotti, who's one of our NEPT certified coaches, and she's on my team and coaches people. And she's going to go through for the gut stuff. She's going to go through some of the organic acid stuff and how she does it. She's brilliant at doing that. So she's going to do that. Those of you who just joined us, you know, last year or this year, you're going to get a free ticket to Shine. So a free VIP ticket. So you'll get that. That's for full program. The level one, you'll have to do it. But for full program, you're going to get that. That's one of your bonuses and, you know, whatever. But it's going to be so worth it because she is so brilliant and she's going to present an actual case on that. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about it at the Shine Weekend because it's part of it. The whole theme is the microbiome, the genes and labs associated with microbiome balance set and how it affects the neurotransmitters and hormones. So that's mm-hmm. the whole theme of it.
Right? When is the Shine Conference?
It's the 16th through the 18th, 16th through 18th. So it's the okay. evening of the 16th. If you do the VIP, you'll get during the day on the 16th, we'll get Lisa. And the night before, like the 15th evening, like 6 o'clock or whatever, we're going to have Steph Jackson, and she's going to be doing some really, really in-depth microbiome balancing stuff. She always gets frustrated when I only give her like 15 minutes or a half an hour to speak. And I told her you can take an hour and a half to 2 hours if you want, because it's this extra in-depth training and she's thrilled. And you'll learn a lot from her. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And the April 16th, my birthday.
April 16th is your birthday. It's my son's birthday.
Oh, nice.
I think you're a little older than him, but probably not much, but he's 20. Oh. He's going to be 27. I am not old enough to have a 27 year old. I'm just telling you, I am not. I had him when I was five. No, I feel like I'm in my mid thirties. I feel like I'm just a little older as he's growing up. I'm like, I'm not much older than you, my dear, but you know, that's besides the point. But yeah, so that's it's a great day. Happy day. He was my firstborn. So happy day for me. All right, guys, have a great rest of the day. Have a great rest of the week. And watch out. I have a webinar coming up tomorrow. If you go to drhenry.com.
Thank you.
Join now. drhenry.com/join now. And I'm going to be talking about genetic SNPs related to microbiome balance, 5 genetic SNPs related to microbiome balance. Okay. All right, guys, have a great one.